Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and every major podcast provider. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, or send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today, we're continuing our series called The Neonicotinoid View, and joining me will be Tom Theobald, and we're going to be talking to John Van Alten, who is the president of the Ontario Beekeepers Association. We're going to be discussing the bee kills in Ontario and Quebec, as well as a review of several neonicotinoids by Canada's Pest Management Regulatory Agency, which is basically their EPA. And we're going to be talking about some of the events, especially the types of crops that were involved, were there other bee kills seen but not reported, and also have a discussion about some of the things that are going on in Canada that maybe perhaps we should be doing here in the United States. So I would first like to welcome to the show my guest host, Tom Theobald. Good afternoon.
Hi,
Tom.
June. Hello,
and,
June.
And also our special guest, Mr. John Van Alten. Good afternoon, Mr.
Hello,
Van Alten.
June and Tom. Nice to meet you.
Now, Mr. Van Alten, can you tell our audience about yourself and how long you've been a beekeeper?
Well, I've been a beekeeper since 1981, so if we do the math on that, that's a little over 30 years. We run about 2,000 colonies in southwestern Ontario. We've been mainly focused on honey production, but in recent years we've started to move towards some pollination contracts as well.
Thank you. Now, in regards to the honeybee health in Canada, can you share with us some of your observations? How healthy are the honeybees in Canada, and how have the populations been? Are they sustainable? Are they declining? Can you share with our audience a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, in Canada in general, honeybee colony numbers are remaining about the same or slightly increasing, and I think that's largely due to the need for pollination honeybees. It seems to be a little more profitable there, so there's more of an incentive to keep more colonies. The last 10 years or so have been somewhat challenging, been actually quite challenging to overwintering bees, where we would get fairly high overwintering mortality. This spring was an exception to that. We had very excellent overwintering, largely due to the fact that there was hardly a winter. I think that played into it quite significantly. But it has been challenging to keep the bees alive over the winter. Over the last, say, 3-5 decades, average wintering mortality would have been around 10%, where if we put 1,000 colonies into the winter, we would expect to have 900 live colonies in the spring. But in the last 10 years, it's been inching up, or it's actually exploded up to more around the 25-30% range, where we would see losses of significant numbers over the winter, and it's changed our beekeeping, our focus of beekeeping a little bit, in that we spend more time rebuilding our colonies in the spring, and in order to have the numbers that we need in order to produce a honey crop or to look after our pollination contracts.
John, you came to our attention as a result of an article that appeared that said that Canada was reviewing the status of some of the systemic pesticides. Could you just share with the listeners what your experience has been and perhaps what some of the problems are and what the impact has been?
Sure. I believe that the Health Canada or the Pest Management Regulatory Agency, they announced several months ago that they would be doing a reevaluation of three of the neonicotinoid insecticides that are currently being used for various crops and as seed treatments in Canada. The three that they're reevaluating are clothianidin, thiamoxidin, I think, I'm not exactly certain how to pronounce that, and imidacloprid.
Thiamethoxam, I think it is.
Thiamethoxam, yeah, sorry. It seems like we have to become chemists now that we're beekeepers as well.
Yeah, they're really tongue twisters, too.
Yeah. Anyway, largely due to reports of acute poisoning incidents that have occurred over the last 2 years in Quebec and in Ontario. They're in the middle of I'm sorry.
Incidents. What's the origin of those acute incidents? What are the crops involved for you?
Yeah, we're largely guessing, but I think we have some fairly good clues as to what's involved. The latest incidents that we've experienced are around the seeding of corn, and the corn tends to be coated with a seed treatment of that includes clothianidin. So what our theory is that the mechanics of putting seed into the ground has changed over the years, and more farmers are using what they call air seeders, and that involves using a fairly high pressure air to ram the seed into the ground. I mean, it works very well because they get very consistent seeding using that air system. But what our theory is that air also shoots back into the atmosphere, and some of the chemicals that are on the seed end up being blown across the fields or into the atmosphere.
You're familiar with the Purdue study earlier this year, I think.
I'm not. I to tell you the truth, I've seen a lot of studies, and I'm not entirely certain which one that is.
One of the things that the Purdue study found was the association between fugitive planter dust. My understanding is that they have to lubricate these seeds, and they use talc to do that, and some of that talc rubs off in these pneumatic seeders and is exhausted along with the clothianidin.
Yeah.
Do you grow any canola in your area?
There's some canola grown in our area. It's not a big crop in southern Ontario, but in some parts a little bit north of us here, it's part of the rotation. We have a four crop rotation generally for cash crop, in that area. We have a three crop rotation in general in southern Ontario, but in some areas where the heat units are right, they use a four crop rotation, and canola is part of that.
And what would be the other crops?
It would be corn, soybeans, wheat, and then canola.
Uh huh. Alfalfa?
Yeah.
Do you grow alfalfa?
There's alfalfa that's grown, but it's generally not grown in that rotation. Like they may put the fields into alfalfa for a few years and then start the rotation again.
Do your bees work the soybeans?
My understanding is that they do. We have other flower other things that are flowering at the same time, but in areas where there's a lot of soybean being grown, like where it's a predominant crop, I think the bees do work it.
Mm-hmm. One of the concerns that we've had here in the United States is that these systemics are water soluble and can migrate with the groundwater and can be drawn up by non-target plants, weeds, wildflowers, subsequent plantings. They also accumulate in the soil. Do you have any sense of what may be happening in your area with regard to that? Have you
looked
at that part?
I've heard the same thing. I don't have any first-hand experience with that, but in speaking with PMRA some of the people that are involved in the reevaluation, they will be looking at that as well as they reevaluate these chemicals. But yeah, that's my understanding is that clothianin can be taken up in groundwater and spread that way.
Do you have any idea as to where this investigation stands? Have they given you any idea of when we might hear something?
No. Well, we hope to have them speak at our AGM in November, and whether or not they'll have any specific news for us, that remains to be seen. They tend not to release too much information at once, like unless they're pretty sure of what they're going to say. But I can say that in the specific incidents that we've had this spring, with acute poisoning in the samples that were taken, that's separate from the reevaluation. Like this was an investigation that PMRA was involved in, just to look into the acute poisoning that was happening here this spring. I think they took a little over 100 samples and of different, in different incidents, and about 70% of them came back with clothianin in the dead bee sample. So I would say it's very safe to say that clothianin is part of the problem that happened here this spring.
Mr. Van Alten, I have a question for you in regards to your own bees. Have you seen any evidence with your own colonies of any type of impact with any of the neonicotinoids?
Yeah, that's a really hard question to answer, June. Beekeepers quite often notice, and myself included, quite often notice, what we could say might be a pesticide problem, but it's so hard to ascertain as exactly what happened. We're not in our bees in every colony every day sort of thing. So we generally work on about a 2 to 2.5 week rotation between the times that we see where we visit our colonies, and a lot can happen between in the between time when we're not there. But we haven't in our own operation here this spring. We have not experienced the acute poisoning that the other beekeepers. In the farther south area of the province and a little east of us here seem to have experienced.
Mr. Van Alten, could you share with us what you have heard from other beekeepers, especially with the small number of incidents that were communicated to you? Did they mention anything in particular?
What was described to me did sound very much like acute poisoning symptoms. They would have come. They came to the bees, and this is in fairly early in April, which is somewhat unusual for our area to be to be at that stage already in April. But we had a fairly early spring here, so. Farmers were planting corn probably about 2 weeks earlier than they normally do. Beekeepers reported that they came to their hive and they found large numbers of dead or dying bees at the entrance of the hive, exhibiting twitching type of symptoms. Some of the incidents, the bees had were carrying loads of dandelion pollen. Other incidents, it was too cold for the bees to be flying, and they were actually leaving the hives, dying and twitching. So it seemed to be several modes of transmission that the bees were affected by, either by where they were out gathering pollen, and they were carrying back pollen that was laced with pesticide. Or some kind of a the pesticide was in the atmosphere and moved through the bee yard and affected the actual beehives.
Thank you. Tom, can you elaborate on some of the findings that, or some of the things that you've heard in your neck of the woods?
Well, the thing that comes to mind for me is that one of the difficulties with these systemic pesticides is they have numerous modes of action, and the acute bee kills are just one of those. And any beekeeper who's paying attention to their business recognizes that right away. But some of the more subtle effects are a little harder to discern, and the overwintering is one of those. And I, 4 years ago, discovered what I referred to as the break in the fall brood cycle. Normally, beekeepers wouldn't be going into their colonies, at least here in the late fall, in any great detail. And what I found was that the queen had stopped laying about the third week in September, at the very time when a colony would be producing the winter bees, and that continued for the next several weeks. And the question was, what's going on? My hypothesis was that the bees had brought in a surplus of corn pollen in August, and as soon as the corn stopped tasseling, they went on to whatever was pollinating, and the stored corn pollen remained there until about the third week in September, when the floral spectrum begins to shrink, and they started tapping it, and it had the effect that the research would tell us it would, which is to disrupt the fertility of the queen and the viability of the brood. And what resulted from that was, by early November, you have a relatively small cluster that is not likely to be able to make it through these cold, temperate winters, and thus the high winter losses. Another manifestation of the systemics, I believe. It's also believed to interfere with their homing ability, their memory, their grooming behavior, which is important in a social colony like the bees. How many colonies are we talking about in Ontario and Quebec that are at risk? How large is your industry, and what percentage of those have been affected by these systemics, do you think, John?
I'm sort of guessing here, but I believe there's around 80,000 colonies in Ontario, and there might be around 50 or 60,000 colonies in Quebec.
Well, that's pretty substantial.
It's pretty substantial. The affected colonies, again, I would just be guessing, but judging by what we've heard, there'd be several thousand colonies this spring that were affected. But Go ahead.
You say you're doing more pollination. What crops do you pollinate?
The traditional pollination, of course, are the cherries and apples and that sort of thing in the spring. We've always had that, but there's a fairly substantial hybrid canola pollination opportunity in southern Ontario, and as well as we do ship bees to the East Coast for blueberry pollination as well.
The canola pollination, is the canola from treated seed, and are those beekeepers experiencing any problems, or no?
I would say there's been no acute poisoning for sure. Whether there's any long-term effect, I wouldn't be able to say. I know in southern Alberta there's close to 60,000 colonies that go to hybrid canola pollination. It's a pretty big deal out there.
Mm-hmm.
And in talking to those beekeepers, they seem to be quite happy with the state of their bees when they come out of canola pollination.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think the complaints that I hear are more around the and the incidents of poisoning are more around the sprays after, like, you know, just as the canola is coming into bloom. Sometimes there's a need to control some type of a moth, I believe, and they'll need to spray the crop when the bees are in there, and that seems to I know that the beekeepers are never happy to see that happening, and they
sure.
do get some mm-hmm. negative effect of that, but I can't say that I've heard of any complaints around because of the seed treatment. Of course, the bees aren't in the canola when the canola is being seeded, so maybe that's, you know, there's no issue there.
Well, the concern is the systemic that's expressed in the pollen and the nectar.
Yeah, and the studies that, like, it's hard to really point a finger because, I'm not a scientist, but from all that I've read, or at least the little that I've read, they talk about, like very small numbers per billion or something like that of anything coming through. So it would have to be an accumulated effect, I think, rather than a one-time effect, you know.
And that's exactly what Dr. Henk Tennekes in Holland has proposed, that it is indeed cumulative and irreversible, that the effect that the systemics have on the nerve synapses is cumulative and irreversible, so that very tiny amounts over time can have the same or even a greater effect than a large exposure all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like the gift that keeps on giving.
Yes, sort of.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting problem. We are in discussion with the company that produces clothianidin, and they seem to be quite concerned, of course, that their product is implicated in this. One of the things that we run into, or that concerns us, is the fact that what we don't want to do is we don't want to pit the beekeeper against the farmer. Basically, the farmer is trying to make a living, and so is the beekeeper, sort of thing. But the product that the farmer is being offered, their only option seems to be the treated seed. And in speaking to them, they've indicated to me that they don't want to kill honeybees either, but they don't always have an option as far as what they can put in their field.
Sure.
I've talked to
a number of farmers who are unhappy with the performance of the systemic pesticides and some of the genetically modified crops, but they really don't have an alternative because, at least in this country, the chemical industry has taken control of the seed business as well. So they have the farmers in a bind. The farmers really have nowhere else to go.
Yeah. And so, one of the concerns that we have is that, the way agriculture has evolved, farmers need to be able to control certain pests, and they're working towards trying to minimize their cost on that. But my concern is that, if some of the controls that they currently have available aren't allowed, what's the next thing that they're going to have to use to control pests, right? We would have a similar discussion again 3 years from now around that new chemical that they're using. So I'm a little bit cautious about calling for a ban on clothianidin, just because it's been used for quite a few years and there hasn't been that many, other than this spring. No, don't get me wrong, it's a serious situation, but other than this spring, it hasn't been a real serious issue, at least in our part of the world, that I'm aware of. And I
agree with you. I think a ban is just too abrupt. I think there has to be some orderly withdrawal of these products so that the farmers can make a transition.
Yeah, yeah.
And also so that they don't use something that's even worse.
So exactly. That's my. It's sort of like the devil that you know is probably better than the one that you don't know. You know. So
I think we need a change in the basic technology, because these
yeah.
these chemicals that they're using seem to be an endless spiral downward.
Yeah.
They fail fairly quickly because of the way they're used, and then they pile something on top of it, and then there's something else. And
I agree with you on that. That's and the resistance to the pests to that chemical, if they keep using it, and then they have to move on to something else. But we experience that even in our own beekeeping operation when we're trying to control some of the pests that affect our bees as well, right? So the resistance.
Are the varroa mites an issue for you?
Pardon me?
Are the varroa mites an issue for you in your beekeeping operation?
They're very much an issue, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They tend to go in about a 3-year cycle where if they're not held in check, that our bees the wintering ability of a colony that's affected negatively by varroa is very low. So we do have to use some control measures to keep the populations under control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's also the case across the country.
Do you have national beekeeping organizations in Canada?
We have one.
In the United States, we have the American Beekeeping Federation and the American Honey Producers. Those would be the two. Do you have something similar?
Yeah, we have what we would call the Canadian Honey Council.
Uh-huh.
That they would represent the national interests of beekeepers across the country. So basically, there's provincial organizations that, such as the Ontario Beekeepers Association, and then we would have representation at Canadian Honey Council. So it's a little bit of a difference. You guys have got, I don't know how many beekeepers you have in the U.S., but it's significantly more than in Canada. I think in
have
Canada
have you seen this large upsurge in hobby beekeepers in Canada?
In Ontario especially, or at least I can speak for Ontario, there has been a quite an upsurge of interest in beekeeping at a recreational level. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think largely as a result of all the press that bees have been getting around, the disappearing bee, CCD, and all that stuff. Yeah.
Well, I think it's very important, especially since people are becoming more and more aware of the problems, and when it becomes personal, that's when people really start to get involved, and we can begin to really make the changes that we need to before we don't have that option. So, it's very important that people, start to become more educated about the situation that you and your colleagues face, as well as, what's going on here in the United States. But, Mr. Van Alton, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It has been great talking to you and learning about what they're doing up in Canada, and also what you're doing within your own organization.
Well, thank you for asking me, and good luck with your show.
Thank you, John. Let's keep in touch. We'll have an opportunity to speak again, I hope.
Okay, Tom.
Also,
thank you.
Mr. Van Alton, would you care to share with our audience your website?
Sure. Our website is www.dutchmansgold.com. We have what I consider to be a fairly nice website, and hopefully people can learn something from it.
And also, can you share with our audience your organization's website as well?
Yeah, I believe it's www.ontariob.com.
Thank you.
ONTARIOBEE.
Thank you.
Okay.
And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic Bee Radio Show. Thank you, Tom, and have a great weekend, everyone.